You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is Torture Cast. Welcome, everybody, to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. This is episode 44, I guess, but really this is episode 40. Let's call this episode 43 plus or 43.1, because this is a special episode where we're going to be talking to the social media director of the San Francisco Giants, Brian Srabian, in a moment. My name is Willie Dills. I'm, of course, joined by my other two co-hosts. We'll start with Ben Lee. We've missed you, Ben. Welcome back. Howdy. To the show.
Good to be back. I've been working my tail off.
Yeah.
A lot of things.
Well,
celebrating Eli Whiteside Day.
Eli Whiteside Day. That's right. It was, a week ago?
It was about a week ago. I want to say it was on a Thursday. It's only technically a holiday in the city that he's from, but Giants fans everywhere should at least learn to respect Eli Whiteside.
Sure, why not? Yeah. Eli Whiteside, fantastic Giant. Absolutely. Of course, I'm also joined by Chad King. Welcome, Chad.
Thank you for having me back again, guys. This is Brian Srabian, or not Brian Srabian. This is
no,
Brian
not
Srabian.
Brian Srabian. Not, yes. No,
you know, just in case anyone wasn't familiar with the.
Is this a common problem? I imagine it's a common problem.
It's got to be common with him.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
it's you know what? It's just, and we talk about it with him on the show here on the interview. It's one of those things that's just so weird. It can only be real. You can't make this type of thing
up.
So before we get to the Brian Srabian interview, which we talked to him for a good long while. I mean, we set out to talk to him for about 30 minutes, but he was really great and he was really gracious to talk to us. He talked to us for about 50 minutes here, so we're going to get plenty of Srabian time in, and so look forward to that. He was just a blast to talk to, and as I said to him at the end, I mean, I could have talked to him for hours on hours.
Real interesting stuff.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll get that chance. I hope so. But anyway, let's talk real quickly about some of the stuff going on in the Giants universe before we move on to the interview. Before I talk about FanFest, let's talk about Pablo Sandoval here, because he's playing baseball right now.
He's a popular topic.
Yeah, he's playing baseball right now. Or actually, he was. He's done. Because he actually hit a home run in the deciding Game 7 of the Venezuelan Winter League Finals. And basically just won two World Series in a matter of 3 months, I guess. 2 months, I guess.
Wait,
you could
so
say.
So, okay, 2010 World Series, 2012 World Series, Venezuelan Winter League World Series, and now he's going to the World Baseball Classic after that.
That's right,
right.
Yeah. So this guy loves baseball. Can we all just agree on that? I mean,
look, we like a safe bet. Somehow.
Yeah,
that's right.
Maybe people want him to be doing Camp Panda and losing a bunch of weight, because I saw the video of him hitting a home run. I got to say, he looks a little bit on the hefty side, but he hit the crap out of that ball. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have any complaints about Pablo. I'm not going to jump on the Pablo needs to lose weight bandwagon. I'm just going to let the guy do what he does, because it seems to be working. I mean, he went 3 for 5 in this Game 7, two doubles and a home run. And over the entire Venezuelan Winter League that he played in, he hit 313, I believe, something like that. I mean, he's swinging the bat. He's doing well. So really exciting to see that, and really cool to see Pablo excelling at what he loves and doing it on a stage in front of his – I mean, he's a god over there. He's just unbelievably famous in his home country. So this was just really cool to see. Guess who got the win in this game, by the way?
Ooh, I don't know that one.
If you just pick a player that you might think, just anything, pull it out of the ether. Anything? It's not a name.
You say that, no.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Gene Machi got the win.
Oh, Machi.
Yep.
Machi.
Got the win
in
this game.
That coming.
Very cool. Right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
So a couple of Giants coming up big there in the Venezuelan finals. So that's very, very cool.
The San Francisco Magallanes.
That's right. So Navegantes del Magallanes. There you go. Mm. Congratulations to them. All right, let's talk about FanFest. You guys are all going. It's February 9th. Begins at what, like 9 a.m., 10 a.m.?
Depends on whether you think you're going to get in or not.
10. Okay, so doors open at 10.
So basically show up the night before.
Yeah, absolutely. And get your camping gear out there.
Seriously, I'll think about it.
It's going to be packed. It is definitely going to be packed. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it was packed after they won the World Series in 2010. Last year, I went, and this was after they didn't win the World Series, but you still have a little bit of the hangover
still effect. Packed.
It's so weird for us, them not winning the World Series.
I know. It's like, what's wrong with this horrible year we had? But I took my daughter up last year, and gates opened at 10, just like this year. And we got there about 8:30 or so, and the line was, if you know anyone out there is familiar with how AT&T Park is set up and where McCovey Cove is and Lefty O'Doul Bridge and all that, the line went from the park across the bridge down the waterfront to the McCovey statue and then out into the parking lot area where you have all those pier parking garages. And we were way back there at 8:30 in the morning. It was absolutely insane. And so by the time the gates actually opened up, and you know, I'm trying to have my 6-year-old actually sit there and be patient while we're waiting, the line is calmly moving in not single file, but you know, a bunch of ants kind of moving in one line. But as you got closer to the park and crossing the bridge, there's no one there to check or control the line. So you just had masses of people from all directions just streaming in at the last second, getting in well before we did. So it was really frustrating in the sense that, you know, me and my daughter pretty much stood in line for 90 minutes and people who walked up 5 minutes, you know, before the gate opened got in right away and ahead of us. So just everyone be prepared to maybe curse at a few people. But I guess they
careful
were turning
about being in front of the 6-year-old.
Yeah, but Willie, didn't you show up pretty late last year, but you still got in, right?
Yeah, no, last year I showed up fairly late because it was my birthday and we'd gone out the night before. And we dragged ourselves down there.
So you had to do laundry in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Chores. Yeah. Yeah. I had to drag myself down there as soon as possible, humanly possible in my state. And but we basically, once we got there, we just walked right in. Obviously, we missed some stuff early on, but, it was still fun. And we didn't get in line for anything. We just drank, took pictures, walked around on the field, watched the KNBR stuff. This year will be probably no different. So, but maybe since all three of us are there, we can do a podcast. So that would be fun if we can pull that off. We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Well, that's
first we have to get in.
True. True.
I think we'll be able to do that.
Yeah, we'll find a way. We will find a way.
It's not our first rodeo. The city has done post World Series fan fests before.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna like get out there like 8 a.m. or anything, but.
No.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm just going to get there and I'm going to find a way in. I'm just going to make it work. So that's going to be big. That is February 9th. I'm really looking forward to that. And I think that's pretty much all we need to cover. Let's just move right on to Brian Srabian. What do you guys say? Anything else?
No.
Everything else.
Just hope to see you all at FanFest next week.
Yeah. If you are going to FanFest, let me just say this real quick. If you're going to FanFest and you listen to this show, hit us up on Twitter. Let us know where you're at, what you're going to be doing. We would love to get a chance to meet up and say hi and talk.
I'll see if
I
can wear my snazzy TortureCast shirt.
Oh, I will definitely be wearing mine. I will definitely be wearing mine. Chad, that's an amazing present, by the way.
Hey, no problem. Sorry it wasn't a little thicker. I thought it was a little thicker material, but that's okay. It's going to be real hot next weekend, right?
That's true. I want a nice thin T-shirt, and I want the back of it to be number 24 with the name Dills on it. So
that's right.
I got all my wishes all at once. So that was really cool. So look for us. We'll be wearing TortureCast shirts. We should just all wear those, and then everybody will know exactly who we are.
That.
Yeah. All maybe right, so let's get right to this interview with Brian Srabian. Chad, you want to hip us to some of his give us some information on who this guy is if people don't know.
Yeah, stepping all over your podcasting ability here. All right, so we have Brian Srabian. Squish. He is the social media director of the San Francisco Giants. He's been with the team for 17 years now. He actually started as an intern in 1995. He did take a 2-year absence in 2008, and he rejoined the team in 2010, and look what they did. They've won the World Series 2 out of 3 years as he's been social media director. So he took over the team when they only had 3,000 followers on Twitter. So it's pretty amazing to see the growth that him, the team, and everybody else has kind of led, as well as the World Series wins. But he has a sports and entertainment marketing background. He has a degree from Santa Clara University. And in fact, he's been interviewed quite a bit around the internet by The Rose Show, Gloves Off Sports, The Sports Networker, and a few others. He even won an award in January. He was named the most influential people in sports business by networker.com. So that's pretty cool. So he's a great guy. We had a wonderful interview with him, and he certainly is a bright fellow and at the top of his game.
Yeah. Now, you did mention he teaches at USF too, right?
Yes, he teaches at USF as well. Yes.
Yeah. So busy, busy guy. And we interviewed him over Skype. There's a couple little technical issues at some point. I'll try to clean those up as best I can, but bear with us because it sounded like he was doing it on his phone, but it doesn't matter. It's a wonderful interview and really, really great conversation we had with him. And he was game to talk for, I mean, we tried to get it to 30 minutes. We went for 50 at least.
And great torture cast tradition.
Yeah, exactly. In the great torture cast talk way too long tradition, we talked to him for 50 minutes, but he never seemed like he was trying to rush us off or anything
not
like that.
Not at all.
And very, very, really cool guy and really, really fun to talk to him. So let's jump right into that interview right here on Torture Cast. Boom. All right, so this is TortureCast interview with Brian Sarabian, who is, of course, the social media director of the San Francisco Giants. We're incredibly excited to have Brian on the show. Brian, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys, and it's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, and we're all big fans of your work as social media. We're just part of the community, really. But a few years ago, we decided to start doing this podcast, and that's really kind of thrust us more into the Giants community and the social media that surrounds that. And we've gotten to watch what's happened over the last few years kind of from a different perspective, and it's been really cool to be a part of that. So we want to say thank you first, and we'll jump right on into some questions.
Yeah, thank you, guys. It's a nice compliment, and I think the fact that you're doing a podcast, I mean, it just shows how savvy our fans are and how much enthusiasm there is about the Giants. And it's really neat from my perspective to see all the fan blogs, all the fun Twitter accounts, and my job is to just kind of keep an eye on the Giants community and all things in the social sphere. So it's exciting to see the last few years how that's kind of exploded.
Absolutely. So we got kind of a structured format today so the three of us don't step on each other's tongues and so you don't get berated too much. But I'll go ahead and lead it off here. I'm gonna ask a tough one first. I'm going to get this out of the way. So you were hired as an intern with the Giants in 1995, correct?
That's right.
Okay. Well, and Brian Sarabian was hired as GM in 96. So were you actually in line for the GM position or was there some sort of paperwork error? That just seems too odd.
It's funny. I still have not received any confirmation on this. I tried to, I thought I was actually getting hired for that job. You know what? It's a coincidence that's last. I mean, this is, you talk about, I'm a big fan of Seinfeld and of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And to me, this is like one of those episodes that would be, an ongoing joke that Brian Sarabian and Brian Sarabian both work for a baseball team. And when they started at Candlestick, there was a lot more confusion because both of us were obviously unknown. And we had the old days before email and direct messaging. You had to call a front desk and go through, an operator. And we could have a whole podcast on all those stories. So
yeah.
Luckily, Mr. Sarabian has a good sense of humor about it. And, I've had my seats upgraded at various venues.
Nice.
Unbeknownst to him. So, it's worked out nicely.
Yeah. Well, I work with a guy. His name's Michael Jordan. So he kind of gets it from both ends. So I can understand.
There you go. Exactly.
Here's one for you. Can you briefly describe, just since we're going to be leading into a lot of discussion about this, can you briefly describe your current position with the Giants and what you might typically do like day to day during the season?
Yeah, I mean, the director of social media, which, you know, basically means I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr all day. You know, it's a job that's kind of evolved. It continues to evolve. But my main, you know, responsibility is I'm the social voice of the team. And I work closely with many departments, and including our communication, PR and marketing teams. And we kind of all work together on, you know, what are the core messages and the events and ongoing elements that are happening around the team. And I kind of funnel those through various social channels. I'm actively monitoring all the social channels and making sure that, you know, I know what's being talked about and any trends that I need to be aware of. I, you know, as the season comes, it shifts and gets a lot busier, obviously. And, you know, and my job is to make sure that, you know, fans are connected to the Giants, and we're finding new ways to do that. And beyond that, it's, you know, looking for, you know, emerging technologies. And, you know, this week there's a new app that's kind of taken the Twitter world by storm, called Vine, and it's a 6-second video, kind of like an animated GIF, and so that's kind of the new rage. And so
my girlfriend loves it, by the way.
Yeah, my daughter and I have been having fun making little animations with little toy figures and stuff. Yeah.
Well, wow, I'm feeling really out of the loop right now, then.
Get on it, Ben.
So, you know, I mean, that's it. I mean, so, I mean, these things, it happens so quickly, and, you know, and one day everybody's on, you know, Vine, and then the next day they're on something else. And it's my job to figure out, you know, well, how can the Giants use this? What are fans using it for? It's definitely an exciting but challenging position, but I love my day to day with this job.
So do you find time to sleep within all of that?
I've learned to kind of, The first season and second season were a little difficult because it was also new and there was a lot going on. But I definitely have, you know, as I get older and more experienced, you find ways to take advantage of your time productivity and making more use of the time. But so, yeah, it's definitely something that it doesn't, you know, social media doesn't sleep. And I mean, I think that was very evident in the postseason. I mean, we can talk about the Rally Zito, but that essentially happened overnight, you know.
I watched that one grow up, and it was just like, wait, this, I step away for half an hour and suddenly this is a whole thing.
Yeah. So, you know, even though you need to find time to shut it down and walk away, you also need to find a way to always be connected and to make sure that, you know, you have people or tools in place that, you know, and that thankfully was a good thing. You know, there's lots of stories of, you know, PR, social media crisis that happened.
Yeah, look at Applebee's right now. I don't know if you're following that at all.
No, but I'm not. What's going on at Applebee's?
Oh my God, Applebee's is embroiled.
Blow up with the pastor.
Yeah, so a pastor decided to write on the check.
That's right.
He gave 10% to God, so he won't give 18% to you. They posted it on Reddit. Then the person got fired, and then it just blew up a whole thing. And now their Facebook, they're actually responding to people, like individuals, and basically arguing with the community on their page, on their Facebook page, and it's turned into quite a debacle for Applebee's.
Yes, yeah, I mean, it's been a tough week in the food industry. We had the Subway footlong controversy, you know, and
yeah,
now
two and
we
have
the
Applebee's.
Yeah, so that's all going on. Then we got the whole Super Bowl, which I've been, you know, kind of as a fan watching, but more as a fan of the social media and the trends that are kind of going on. So, yeah, I mean, it's you know, some of the stuff gets overblown, but that's part of it, you know. And then, you know, like you said, I mean, something goes up on Reddit and then it gets on the Yahoo main page and it makes the mainstream news and it becomes even bigger. So it's definitely, you know, it's still, I mean, we've learned a lot of lessons, but it's still relatively new and people, you know, have different opinions and strategies on how to do it. Luckily, we're in the sports world. So most of the stuff that we talk about is, you know, the lighter side, and it's not too serious, and fans had a lot of fun with it. So
yeah, absolutely. So I mean, speaking of that, I mean, it's safe to say that the Giants have one of, if not the strongest, social media presences in Major League Baseball. And I actually looked this up, and I think this was on the SF Giants website as well, that San Francisco Giants Detroit Tigers Game 4 win was actually the most talked about Major League Baseball game in history. more even than the Cardinals game six win in 2011, which was, you know, unbelievable. But and this is all from Bluefin Labs, and I think you guys posted on the website as well. But, you know, it's kind of crazy how the Giants in particular have kind of blown up as far as the social media presence. And, you know, a lot of that, I'm sure, is attributed to you and the work you do. But, you know, would you tell us a little about the process of when you started out, where it was and how you've built it up, what worked, what didn't, and what you've seen about that as it's grown?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned I started as an intern in 95. I mean, first of all, I'm a lifelong Giants fan.
Sweet.
And, you know, that so that only adds, you know, icing on top of this whole thing, and it's been awesome. But I say that because in 95 I started as an intern in the PR department, and I had various different, you know, jobs all the way through, and I left the organization in 2008, and I returned in 2010 to run social media. So essentially the social media thing began January 2010. Now, Matt Chisholm, who's the manager of media relations for the Giants, actually started a Twitter account for the Giants, and, you know, was really responsible for kind of, you know, hey, let's you know, post our lineups and stats and scoring updates on there. And, you know, just kind of wanted to use it as another tool for the PR department. Then when I came along, yeah, there were various Twitter and Facebook accounts the different departments had used, but decided that why don't we just, you know, focus on one account and just kind of make that the voice of the entire you know, organization through Twitter and
sure,
one
yeah.
for Facebook and focus mm-hmm. on that. So at the time, a lot of baseball teams, very few had a Twitter account or were using it. And I just decided let's experiment with it. And one of the first things that we did that we saw a lot of success was just, you know, developing a voice, kind of a human element, and, you know, talking like fans would and engaging with fans and answering fans' questions. And that, you know, really, we saw a huge boost. And at the time, you know, I think we had like 3,000 Twitter followers. And of course, you know, 2010 was a big year. And towards the end of the year, we really had established a core following. And then, you know, the playoffs came along and things just kind of took off. So I think we learned a lot. But I think, you know, for the most part, you know, we had a strategy in place. You know, we established kind of our voice and who we are. We're going to have some fun, you know, with social media. Mm-hmm. We were going to try to, you know, be as proactive with photos and bringing fans close to the action as possible. And, you know, we were going to have a little fun, but still, you know, keep the brand integrity intact. We weren't going to, you know, say anything that was off color or, you know, controversial, but still, you know, it was more than what we'd done in the past or, you know, what any sports team at the time was kind of doing. So I think, you know, and it resonated. I think it matched our brand with our fans. We've always been a little different in terms of the way that we market our team and our players. You know, we had Brian Wilson and Pablo and Lincecum and everything kind of going for us. So it just kind of all clicked for us at that time. And so, you know, two World Series titles later, here we are. But, you know, to your point, yeah, I mean, I think we can take some credit, but it's more the credit of our fans, you know, that have just really used social media, you know, in a way that, you know, rivals any other sports team out there. I mean,
yeah, the passion. It is San Francisco. So San Francisco is kind of an early adopter almost all the time.
We are a startup
city
in a way, yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Yeah, it is. But, you know, it's not like, you know, again, it, people say that, but it's not like all our fans work at tech companies either. They're regular people. They, you know,
I don't think the dog technology is working at a startup. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, it's just like, you know, iPhones are available in every city and the internet is available in every city. It's just, there's just something about the way that they, you know, use it to, you know, take, you know, I mean, Instagram, we just crush it at the ballpark and the hashtags are just crazy. So there's just something about the way our fans take it to the next level. And I just think it's, has more to do with the, you know, their, not so much their tech skills, but their social skills. It's just, it's pretty phenomenal.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. You're kind of touching on a question I had a little bit later, but I'll go ahead and ask now. So when you do have fans that, you know, start these hashtags like Rally Zito or Rally Enchiladas and all of those things. I mean, well, how do you keep a pulse on that? How do you know when a hashtag or certain trend or term is emerging to the point where maybe you feel like you can kind of take the reins and run with it and, you know, even point back to maybe some of the originators of it and just kind of roll with it as a community and to, you know, interact back and forth and really, you know, make these things go viral, because that stuff was great last year with Rally Zito and Rally Enchilada and the like.
You know, the Rally Zito thing to me was just, like we said, it was, well, we're down 3-1 in St. Louis, and I think everyone just kind of, you know, I look again, it's hard for me sometimes to do my job because it's, you're a fan and you try to, you know, be as professional as possible, but, you know, your emotions take over sometimes. And so, you know, I think like everyone, I kind of felt a little down at that point and a little tired. And, you know, I just felt like maybe it was time to go to bed or whatever. So, you know.
Yeah, well, I was drinking heavily at a casino bar in Tahoe, so.
A little different story. Yeah.
Before game four or five.
Was drinking heavily at home. Who knows? It's hard. It all blends together. But, you know, you wake up the next day and, I mean, or even that night, I probably saw something that, you know, you just kind of, you make a notes of it, but you don't, you know, you're not sure. But it was kind of fun to, like, it was almost like a breath of fresh air, kind of like someone started it and, you know, and people just caught on to it. And you could see when something starts trending, when it becomes a trend, that obviously is a cue. And, you know, we can get technical and talk about, you know, different social media tools and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, if you have someone in place, you know, the eye test is your best. You know, someone has to really pick up on that. And like I said, I'm a fan. I've worked for the team a long time. I think you have to have a strong connection to your brand or your team or whatever it is. You have to have a strong connection to your fans, and the rest of it kind of, you know, falls into place. So I think there's no real secret other than, you know, you can say right place, right time, but I think at the end of the day, it's someone who really, you know, takes that job seriously and is almost anticipating things, and you're looking for things like that. So, and, you know, sure, I mean, I think we've tried things before and they just haven't taken, you know, you kind of think, oh, this will be fun. Let's try to be, you know, the next meme or the next big trend, and it kind of comes and goes. And then other times, like you said, the fans will start something, and at a certain point you jump in and kind of endorse it, and then it just kind of takes off from there. Mm-hmm. So that's always fun. And I think we have that kind of relationship to where, you know, we don't think we know more than our fans. And it's, you know, I think some teams might have been a little nervous to jump in on something that was, you know, organic per se. Yeah. And I think that our social media, we have such a strong relationship with the fans. It kind of goes hand in hand. So
you said organic, and that, I think that is exactly the essence of the whole social media thing, is that something like Rally Zito builds up steam because it is cool. It's awesome. You know,
it's San Francisco, right? Yeah. And it's like, I think anyone outside the city might not have really, or any non-Giant fan might have had a hard time understanding. I don't really get it. What's this connection with, you know, you have to explain the whole Zito.
Yeah, you got
to
say the 5-year history of this and all that. Yeah. And then the A's. I got to go all the way back to the A's.
It's like I'm watching Beach Blanket Babylon during, you know, singing the God Bless America during one of the games. You just saw it blow up on Twitter all over. Everybody go, what is that hat? And anybody who's from San Francisco goes, duh.
Yeah, they go, this is a non-issue. Yeah.
It's our thing. And it's like, it's kind of, that's the cool thing. It's like you know, we kind of assume our fans are in with us, and these things we can, you know, have some fun and do that. But it definitely took off, and then it just kept going and going, and it became kind of a fun story in the social media sense. And it kind of, you know, I think it carried a lot of us, you know, to give us that, you know, kind of like, if fans want they want to have, you know, some say. They want to be able to say that they did something,
sure,
whether they wore their lucky hat or they, you know, yelled loud at a game. This was, you know, the chance for the social media, the Twitterverse, to really say, wow, you know, we took part in this. And, you know, I think I tried to identify who started it. And
I think we know. Do we know?
We do, actually.
Who is it?
It was sort of a disaster for me because I just people were just kind of jumping all, you know, sometimes you try to, you know, I was going to try to give that person tickets to a game and it got kind of ugly. And I said, let's not even run a good thing. Let's just
sure. But our research has said that it's at QI. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a friend of several Giants bloggers who sort of first said, you know what? Yeah, he's sort of very irrepressible, or was during the playoffs and when everybody else was kind of like, well,
that's it.
We kind of did it before, but 3-1, he decided to change his avatar to Zito. And you saw a couple of other bloggers sort of follow suit and then sort of spread from there, since a lot of the bloggers tend to get a lot of views and other followers on Twitter who aren't necessarily part of that smaller inter-Twittering community, if you will. And sort of, I like stepped away from my computer for a bit and like I ate food, I think, came back and went, wait, why does everyone have a picture of Zito on their avatar now?
It happened throughout my workday for me. It was basically just watching Twitter, watching everything, being, you know, because basically I wasn't working during this period of time. I was just paying attention to what was going on with the Giants. And throughout the day, I started to see it happen. And then I jumped on board immediately. I was like, yes, because that wasn't even hashtag. It was not only just a hashtag, it was create an image. I opened Photoshop, created an image of Zito, you know, the picture of him in front of the Golden Gate Bridge with a guitar. Oh, and I took that one, and I put the whole thing in.
I mean, there was just a plethora of great images. I mean, that was beautiful. The beauty of it. It was almost like the Twitter gods, you know, opened, you know, they say the baseball gods. It was like the Twitter gods kind of were like, oh, this is great. You know, look at this. So that's one of those kind of highlights. And then when Ken Rosenthal breaks into the, you know, the game.
Yeah, the
with,
Fox feed, yeah.
Yeah. It's officially a thing. So that, you know, I really wasn't watching the game at that particular point. And, you know, my phone's blowing up. They're like, oh, my gosh, Ken Rosenthal and Fox. And I'm like, I was too nervous about the game to worry about that. But, yeah, that was kind of. It was kind of fun, and you know, and ironically, of course, you know, Barry kind of gave up Twitter years ago, so he.
That's true, yeah. But he heard about this, though. He knew.
Who does it fall to tell him about these kind of things? Is it you? Is it Matt? Does sort of everybody just kind of like, let's just let him find out by himself? He's busy.
Well, he was on the mound, right? So,
well, I mean, not really took off morning, but maybe after the game, you know, or
you know, I think it was a number of, you know, he has a publicist that was, you know, I had talked to the publicist earlier in the day, so she knew, and we kind of, you know, I kind of want to get her blessing on the photo that we were going to use and make sure that, you know, she knew that what we were doing, everything was, and she's great, and he's always been a class act. I mean,
absolutely.
He's always acted professional, and you know that his Twitter experience happened actually in 2009, but that was kind of the Brian Wilson episode. Yeah, and it was kind of before anyone had really known what Twitter was. But it's funny how, you know, I mean, he saw a really bad side of it, and it's, you know, and it's, you know, you hear all this, oh, it's so great for celebrities to get on Twitter, and you know, and anyone who says anything, you've automatically have negative people, you know, already criticizing you for doing nothing, and then you're actually, you know, an athlete and you have a subpar performance, then it really gets ugly. And you know, I think that's the downside of social media, and unfortunately we see that, and not just in his case, in a lot of cases. So you know, he didn't want it to be a distraction, and you know, I applaud him for kind of, you know, shutting it down and focusing on other things. So, but unfortunately, you know, he didn't see the good side of it, but he heard about it, so that's always good.
So I can't help asking this one too. So, can we safely attribute the 2010 World Series win to your return to the Giants front office? And how do you feel about being an organizational good luck charm?
You know, all I'll say this is that it probably saved me from being, you know, depressed the rest of my life if I had a chance to come back and I didn't, and then they did win a World Series.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
It would have been bittersweet to say the least, but. You know, it just, I'll say this, working for a professional sports team, it's the type of thing that, you know, especially if you're a fan of the team, you work extremely long hours. Everyone puts, you know, sacrifices a lot of social events, whether it's a wedding or, you know, just when you're younger, you know, your friends are all going out and you're working long hours on the weekends and up there next day. So there's a team atmosphere in the front office. So And, you know, I remember back in 97 when the Giants, it was our first kind of postseason experience. And
some of the
veterans were just, you know, telling us, hey, you know, you've got to really just relish this. You just don't know when you're going to have another chance to experience, you know, it's fun. It's definitely an exciting time. And so I think I've been extremely lucky, you know, in my career. I've experienced a few World Series, an All-Star game, some home run records, some pretty cool stuff. So I think all of us in the front office, you know, we're really thrilled. I mean, the Giants are a first-class organization. They, you know, they bought the front office rings, you know, for all of us. So,
yeah,
that's awesome.
It really is an honor. I think, you know, we don't take credit for what happens, but we all take credit for the, you know, overall success, and we feel like it's a family there. So it's a neat experience.
I got to say, I mean, we all remember the Lunatic Fringe days and the people kind of saying, oh, we're not getting a winner because of this guy or that guy or the other, whatever reason it might have been.
Social media, or, you know, I guess that was more just when blogging was, you know, but there was no Twitter, there was no Facebook.
No, so yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting. Absolutely.
But, you know, it's now, as a Giants fan, there's not, I mean, the Lunatic Fringe, they must all just live in caves now, because as Giants fans, we have to feel absolutely blessed for what we've experienced over the past 15 years. I mean, it's just unbelievable what we've seen as Giants fans. And we talk about it on the show all the time. We have to consider ourselves incredibly lucky. I mean, there's Pirates fans out there, you know, and they don't get this. They don't get these experiences. And we've seen incredible stuff since the new park is open, prior to the park being open. Everything that's happened over the past 15 years or so is just unbelievable. So,
no, it's a good point. I mean, I think, you know, we remember, you know, I remember 1982 as being like such a great year, because there was, you know, came down to the last weekend and it was like, oh, that's exciting, you know, and and then 87, you know, and 89 were like fun years. And then, you know, 93 is still a year that I just will never forget in my life as a fan, because you just feel like, what else do you have to do? You know, win 103 games and
not get their best team ever.
Maybe.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So you're right. I think we've really had – this is the golden age of being a Giants fan. And, you know, I think it's having, to me, the best park in all of baseball, and having, you know, potential Hall of Famers on our roster, and having a manager that, you know, that just seems to do everything right. And it's just everything is just – it's fantastic right now. It's almost – you know, I have two young kids, and I just – I'm almost afraid of, you know, the fact they think that this is the way it is every year, and they have no appreciation for being a true Giants fan, you know, and all the down years that we had. But it's really a special time.
I think sometimes that might be why baseball is my sport rather than football, because as I was growing up, I was like, yeah, the Niners just win. That's what happens. The Niners win the Super Bowl. And, you know, I was born in 1980, the very first year of my life we won a Super Bowl, and my entire, you know, very young years, I remember all these weird memories of, oh, my parents are drinking these funny drinks and getting all drunk and cheering a lot about this football team. And that just continued on. I was 14 years old and we won the fifth one, and never again. But, you know, I mean, for as a Giants fan, it was 89. Crushed me as a 9-year-old. You know, it was just so excited and then so mad and sad. But, you know, it's just, it builds character. And you're right saying, I wonder what the kids now are going to think. They're going to think this is how a season ends. A season ends with a World Series win. You know, it's very strange to think about. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the team now. And, you know, the team is known a little bit for being somewhat of a band of – the Band of Misfits thing was actually kind of a tag that was given to them, but always kind of a strange cast of characters. And I'm wondering, do you guys, when the season starts, do you have maybe a strategy to portray the team a certain way, or do you just kind of cultivate that strategy during the season as you start to see – these personalities develop and the fan reaction to some of the players? I mean, do you start with something, or do you just kind of wait and see kind of attitude? How does that work?
I think it's a little of both. I mean, obviously there's some that just kind of, you know, happen on their own. I mean, you know, the Tim Lincecum you know, freak thing. I mean, that just kind of just happened, and, you know, he grew his hair out and you know, and then he kind of becomes a cult figure, and everything about his story kind of lends himself to, you know, who he is and the way he dresses and the music he listens to. And then you've got, you know, the Kung Fu Panda and that whole nickname, and then, you know, the panda hats, and then, you know, and of course, Crook and Kipe are a big part of all that, you know, and it just seems like they kind of ordain all the stuff that happens, you know, and the baby giraffe and all these names. And then, you know, and then you got guys like Brian Wilson that, you know, when his whole, the height of his fame and his beard, and that just kind of, you know, so I think it's being able to take advantage of those things. And again, we're storytellers in a way, and, you know, we're kind of blending it all together. And, you know, I think the Giants will let things kind of happen. You know, we're not the ones that are manufacturing the nicknames or whatnot. In most cases, they're kind of happening, whether it's Crook or Kipe or it's a fan or a player. And then, you know, but we'll kind of build upon that. There might be a, you know, I mean, the K-ville kind of came out of that, because we had players that obviously were striking out. You know, the Lincecum wigs, you know, we sold, and the panda hats we sell, obviously, because of that. So I think there are promotions and there are kind of, you know, mini campaigns per se that happen because a player becomes so powerful. I mean, I don't want to talk too much about Melky Cabrera, but the one thing that I would laugh about was, you know, people would think that the milkmen were actually Giants employees when No, I mean, this is in, you know, and they came, I remember running into, or actually I saw it, you know, I saw the first post just on Twitter, and they're like, hey, we're going to be at this game. And it happened to be against, I think it was an A's game. I think my wife actually, she had like a company outing. So I was actually sitting with her, and I ran into the milkman that night. So, you know, that type of thing just kind of took off on its own. And, you know, and we obviously, you know, someone in our department, you know, met with them just to say, hey, you know, we want to talk to you guys and see if we can, you know, work with you or, you know, help you out. And there was no payment of any kind. I think they might have gotten passes to one game, but for the most part, these guys were real fans. Mm-hmm. They came up with the concept themselves. And I think that's the type of thing that, you know, that our fans are, you know, like we said, they, you know, they're socially savvy, they're Giants savvy, and they come up with, we've created this environment. You know, I love the playoffs, because it's a chance for the, you know, the rest of the nation to see what it's like to play baseball here. It's a little different. It's an event. And, you know, when Romo comes in now with his, you know, with his mariachi song, it's unbelievable. It's, you know, the place is going nuts. And this kind of environment has fostered. So I think it's a little of both, but we definitely let things happen, you know, naturally, and let the fans kind of, you know, tell the story, and then we kind of, you know, take it from there.
Nice. Yeah.
That's great. So, I mean, obviously you've been with the Giants for 17 years now, which obviously is quite a run with them. But for young, well, I always want to say kids, because I'm about 40 myself, but for young whippersnappers out there who are kind of looking to work in sports. Yeah, get off my lawn. you know, aspiring to work in the this field of sports management, marketing, whatever, what kind of advice do you have for these kids coming out of college and high school?
Yeah, it's so challenging. It's just, you know, I remember I would write letters. I still have a binder full of letters I wrote to the Niners, to the Raiders, to the Giants, to the Warriors, to the Sharks, handwritten or, you know, typed out letters and, you know, letters back. And now, obviously, there's things have just exploded in terms of, you know, connections and the way that we network. And I say this to young people. I say it's never been harder to work in sports, but there's never been more opportunity either. So you really have to be focused on, you know, understanding it's a numbers game. I mean, there's, you know, there's probably 1,000 people all fighting for the same job posting, if not more, that any, you know. And I started as an intern, and if you're lucky enough to get an internship or an entry level position, you know, do what you can to do that, because that's really, you know, your foray into the sports world or into a team. But I also tell them, hey, look, look beyond teams. I mean, we obviously have great teams here in the Bay Area, but there's so many other avenues. You now have all these, you know, video games, you know, EA Sports and PlayStation and 2K. We have number of sports sponsors, you know, Visa comes to mind, Charles Schwab. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at all the sports minded agencies around. So there's other avenues into the sports world, but definitely, I mean, I'm all in this digital thing. So I'm all about, you know, using LinkedIn, you know, creating your own blog or a podcast to establish yourself. You know, you can't apply to a job anymore. It's almost, you have to, you know, be connected to someone and they have to find you before that job is there. And it takes a lot of time. I mean, you have to have a long-term perspective for this. But if you really believe in it, you know, and this is a passion, which is, it really is, you have to, you know, you have to really work hard. You have to really, you know, network yourself to know, you know, the right people. And sometimes it's a longer road than you expect, but you're going to have to, you know, take a few other jobs before, you know, and understand it's a building process to get to where you want to go. So hang in there. But at the same time, you know, if you get a chance for an interview, you get a chance for an internship, never take that for granted and always understand that, you know, that's your time to shine and you got to do something that's memorable so that, you know, you'll continue to rise
Carpe
up.
Carpe diem.
Yeah. Carpe diem. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. I you know, I've had plenty of internships and it's funny, the interns that turned them into jobs and stuck around and eventually started, you know, actually making money at these companies were the ones who basically just said, what do you need me to do? And then not only that, just came up with their own ideas and pitched them basically. Cause you kind of get that opportunity to get in your foot in the door. And yeah. Then that's, you know, you're literally in the door. Yeah. So now it's time to show yourself to be different from everybody else around.
Yeah. Let me just add, you know, just to say that you're a lifelong fan or it's a dream of you to work that's just, you know, the common denominator with everyone. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's a business at the end of the day. And, yeah. you know, smart business people are ones that find solutions to problems. So, you know, your first goal is to understand everything about, let's just say it's the Giants. I mean, get on the internet and learn everything that's going, you know, about the Giants, what projects are involved in, you know, their marketing strategy, what's the event schedule, you know, find whatever job that it is you're going after, you know, understand, you know, don't go in there telling them they're doing everything wrong. But, you know, if you can add solutions to, you know, situations that they're dealing with, if you see that, you know, they're working on a dynamic pricing angle, if you have a way to help them increase or, you know, increase profit or decrease expenses or, you know, increase productivity by X percent, whatever it is, whatever your niche, that's the way you have to go in there. And so I think that, you know, think, even though it's sports, it's still at the end of the day, it's a business and, yeah. and you have to think that way.
So we're buttoned up here against a half hour, so I don't want to keep you too long. So we'll jump into a couple things here. We actually asked some of our Twitter fans and have some answers from them as well as some of our own ideas here. But we're going to pitch you a couple of ideas for promotional nights. All right. So tell us what you think about these. So Chad, why don't you read the first one for him?
All right.
So this came from your wife, right?
This came from my wife. I know it's long in the tooth, but this is the sentiment that she's expressing. How about exhausted moms who want a night to watch the Giants while drinking champagne and being given pedicures in the park while their husbands are home with the kids?
Heritage night.
Throw that on.
Night. Yeah,
so. Mom, I love it. So mom appreciation night.
It's there you go.
Fantastic exactly. idea. The dads stay home with the kids and the moms can, you know, can parade around the park. We can have a shuttle and a bus so we can get them home safely. And we can I think that's not as crazy as you might think.
There you go. So tell.
We've had crazier. The wheels are turning. I think I might forward this one on to the marketing department.
Nice.
I like it.
You can tell Trish that, Chad.
Definitely.
All right, so I got one for you, which is turn back the clock to old school turn back the clock night. because usually, or when I was a kid, Turn Back the Clock night meant 25-cent beers and 5-cent sodas. What happened to that? Why is that not Turn Back the Clock night anymore?
Gee, I wonder.
Yeah, that's a funny one. That's usually, you know, when we announce a Turn Back the Clock and think, what did we do last year? The 1912 Giants versus 1912 Cubs, and there was a lot of, hey, what about, you know, nickel beers or nickel. And I think there was something that was reduced in pricing, but yeah, I'm going to stay away from the pricing of our
company. Okay. Yeah. Wasn't there that horrible, was it Cleveland Indians?
It was the disco night, disco demolition night.
It was 10-cent beer night or something.
Chicago. Yeah.
Amusement park.
Yeah. They had a riot. Yeah. All right, so here's another one. I don't know if you guys ever thought about doing something like this, but Nerd Night, where you have Star Wars Night, which is beautiful, but Nerd Night, gaming, comic books, LARPing on the field during the seventh inning stretch, live action role play, so guys with taped up swords and everything.
I just foresee a lot of rock paper scissors everywhere. Yeah.
And then Hot Pockets for sale at the concession stand.
Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets is a nerd.
It's a stereotypical nerd food item.
Stereotypical people who can't cook item.
Down in their basements eating Hot Pockets. Yeah,
right. Isn't that the same place that most Giants bloggers supposedly hang out? So,
yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
There might, you know, I was going to say, I don't want to go there, but the there are.
We'll do that for you. It's all right.
We have some promotions that have yet to be announced, so that's coming very soon. And I think there's going to be some. There's one that the bloggers I think are really going to like. I'll just kind of tease it right here. That an idea that a blogger actually promoted and kind of started, you know, suggested, and that idea might come to fruition. So
cool.
So just stay attention to that. But yeah, the nerd idea is interesting, and I think you know, the whole Comic-Con world is exploding to a point that might be an idea. So
yeah, absolutely.
Cool. I certainly think seeing strange costumes at the park won't be anything.
Yeah,
unusual.
Exactly. I mean, that's.
I don't think anyone would.
Themes of costumes, you know.
No, exactly.
They don't need an excuse.
Is it a special night tonight? I just see a lot of costumes. Well, that's every night. I don't know.
All right, so you guys have Dog Days of Summer, and how about this? Cat Days of Fall. Bring your cat to the ballpark.
See, the problem with that is that, and I'm not a cat guy, I'm not a cat owner.
Disclaimer noted.
But it just seems that the cats people just let their cats roam around. There's no, at least dogs have a leash or they're very close to their owner, where the cats just kind of do their own thing, and they're, you know, they end, you know, they might end up, you know, down Third Street. Who knows? I don't know.
That game would be interrupted many times with a cat on the field.
Yeah, getting onto the field.
Yeah.
Lay out in the sun or something.
The seagulls might. I don't know how that's going to work.
Oh, my God.
Seagulls.
Oh, come on. But, you know, take me out to the claw game, the seventh inning scratch. There's just so many opportunities there.
Wow. Man. Ben just rattled them off like it was nothing. All right, Chad, was this one from you, this next one? This sounds like something you want to do.
That was me.
Oh, that's you, Ben. All right, Ben.
I've had friends that used to complain about that all the time. You know, they'd. We wanted to suggest adults run the bases because you get kids run the bases. It's a really popular thing, and I think it's really well implemented. And just every time I would, you know, I would have ex-girlfriends that were, you know, 20, 22, and that were just like, I can still pass for 14, right? Like, no, but no.
You know, that's that one. And well, here's a good way for me to plug FanFest, actually, this coming up on February 9th. And, you know, I think the one message that we're trying to, you know, tell people is that, you know, I think automatically people want to go and get in line and get autographs. And that's wonderful. But there's so many other opportunities. And one of the, you know, the coolest things, I think, is the ability to go on the field and play catch and even run
absolutely.
The bases.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, coming down
for FanFest, that's
have a chance to, you know, grab a hot dog, sit in the stands and watch the whoever's on the main stage. You can go take, everyone loves taking pictures of themselves in the dugout, holding the phone, pretending they're calling, you know, play catch in the outfield, hang out, you know, crash against the wall. So there's a, you know, I mean, that's really a great opportunity to come out, and it's all free. And I know there's going to be some long lines for autographs. That's why we're kind of telling people, hey, you know, there's a lot more to FanFest than just the autograph line. So,
yeah, and I just want to say, I think one of my favorite promotions so far that I've experienced, I did go to the sleepover 2 years ago after a Pirates game. So I took my daughter, and she was, I guess, 6 at the time. And we had an absolute blast setting up the tents. She was playing all the games. We played catch out in the outfield, did the hitting machines, ate food in the dugout. So I just want to say that that particular event is really well run. The movie at night with the hot chocolate and the popcorn. She just had a magical, magical time.
That's one of the more popular events. And it's really amazing that, you know, I mean, we don't really promote it at all just because it sells out. Yeah. Almost instantaneously, because it's a very limited. I think there's only 500 people or so allowed on the field.
So much room.
Right. And I went last year with my son, and it was one of the cold. I'm not a camper or an outdoorsman. It was the coldest nights, and I remember hearing, and it was one of the things where you could hear the flags in the wind, and that just made it colder. I just felt like I was in Alcatraz. people loved it. I just think I had to dress a little warmer next year. So
it's super cool thing though. Yeah, it's one of those things. All right, so Ben, you have one from a fan from one of our fans.
One of our fans who's also a huge San Francisco sports fan in general, Amy Louie. She wanted to actually suggest SF Unite Night. I think it's safe to say that Alex Smith and Bruce Bochy made huge splashes last year wearing each other's caps. Well, not each other's caps. I don't think Bochy's cap would stay on Alex Smith's head.
No.
But, you know,
Alex Smith,
maybe the helmet with a little extra padding. But, you know, there was definitely a lot of talk within the San Francisco community about sort of that SF Unite, sort of that hashtag came up for Niners fans who were supporting the Giants fans who were supporting the Niners, as both seasons picked up and gathered a lot of steam. We were fortunate enough to be in the dugout the day that Bruce came out with the Niners cap on. And it immediately kind of made that striking image that a lot of people, even now, you know, you guys are still using that image through the Twitter account. And SF Unite Night, you might need a more catchy name for it, but it's kind of a neat idea, I think, especially as so many teams in this area are starting to be a lot more relevant very quickly.
You know, that's that itself was just, was pretty amazing. I mean, I'm not a 49er fan. So, but when I saw Alex Smith wearing that hat, you know, after every press conference or after every game in the press conference, I thought that was really cool. And then when the whole story broke and then Bochy wore his Giants hat and some of the players kind of said, hey, we've got your back. And then that's when and this is where I think the social media thing takes it, you know, to that next level is, you know, we came up with that hashtag and, you know, and we said SF Unite. I didn't think it would get beyond 24 hours, but it just kind of caught on. And, you know, our team then sent, you know, an autographed hat to Alex. And, and then when Alex threw out the first pitch,
that was amazing.
The playoffs,
it was
one of those, everyone had goosebumps. It was just, and, you know, and then to think of everything that Alex Smith had been through and unfortunately, you know,
Hopefully continues to go through. Yeah,
but it was pretty amazing. Here he is getting a standing ovation, you know, before a Giants game. This whole story, and then to me, it was really cool because the 49ers and Giants. I mean, we really haven't done a lot of promote. I mean, we kind of do our own thing, but you know, we win the World Series, and you know, they would send a congratulatory. But the day of the parade, there was an ad in the Chronicle, and it was, you know, congratulations, and they had hashtag SF Unite.
Oh,
and
wow.
I just thought that was, you know, I was
nice.
Just, very few people, you know, I mean, that's one of those things that, you know, I get very excited about, but a lot of people probably wouldn't just think it's cool. But yeah, you're right. The SF Unite. And I think we both have come together, are both the organizations, and, you know, definitely the social media. I have so much respect for what they're doing, and we do it so differently, but you know, it's definitely, you're right. We've kind of carried it on, and it's kind of captured the imagination of San Francisco, what could happen this weekend. So it's, I like, and I think there are some wheels spinning. And but for some reason, I don't know, they haven't answered our call back. They've been busy, I guess.
Maybe a little bit.
They're doing a couple things.
Kind of rude though. My call. All kidding aside, it's exciting, and we'll see what happens.
So we got a couple of real quick fire type questions. Like, just you can just answer these like kind of almost one words here. So
I love it. Let's do it.
So all right. So I don't know if you can mention it, but what is your Twitter client? What is the one you use?
I can say it. I love TweetDeck myself. Nice. I don't know what it is. It's typically for a game you'll see, or anytime I'm working, I typically have a separate screen just for my TweetDeck, and
it's
I
like
have several
five columns.
Yeah, about five, column six columns.
I think several Chad, you use that, right?
More. Don't you? I'm going back and forth, but yeah, I have a few keywords, you know, the hashtag obviously, and I'm watching a lot of stuff. So that's my favorite client.
All right, so favorite non baseball celebrity Twitter account.
Favorite non okay, well, it's I think the newest one is the modern Seinfeld. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh yeah, the Seinfeld episodes.
So not necessarily a celebrity, but definitely a funny and interesting one. With it takes modern day. You know, it says something like George meets his girlfriend from Match.com, and she's into Downton Abbey, and you know, so uses popular things. From a celebrity standpoint, you said non-athlete.
Yeah, like non-baseball, yeah, but.
Gosh, that's, you know, I hate these questions because it's like I can't, it's like asking what your favorite restaurant is.
Right.
You follow a lot.
I do follow a lot. And I think there's a few people that I think are really funny. I'll say, well, I'm a big, I love Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, yeah.
I love the way he uses Twitter on his show. So I have to say Jimmy Fallon does a great job. But I do follow a lot of non-sports people.
And he was instantly on the Vine thing. He had that video of him and Higgins just kind of looking back and forth, and then suddenly had a hat on, and then he didn't have a hat on, and yeah, he's on that stuff instantly.
And of course, I guess like Jimmy Kimmel too. I'm a big Kimmel. Nice. I love all late night talk shows. So
me too.
All the Jimmys.
All right, so real quick, Super Bowl predictions: winner, final score.
Well, full disclosure, I haven't made the fantasy football playoffs in years. I'm not a big better.
Hopefully there's not a front office pool.
No. Well, there is, but it's typically the, you know, the different stuff. You know, will Jay-Z show up on stage or not? You know, we take it. And I'll be watching more the social media stuff, so I won't be paying attention. But I've got to say that this game it just sounds like the Niners. This is their year. I would think it's going to be a low scoring game just because I think both defenses are just going to, you know, beat each other up. Kaepernick's going to have two big plays, you know, one to Crabtree, one to Vernon Davis, and I think they're going to win 28-21.
All right. I like that. Yeah. Okay. So if you could predict the next guy from this, you know, this new 2013 Giants team that is going to develop a cult following, social media wise, whatever it's going to be. And a lot of these guys are back, obviously, but who do you think is going to be the next kind of guy who we're going to find out is really interesting and really going to create that cult following on this year's Giants squad?
There's two. I mean, for those of you who haven't seen, but Brandon Bell started his Twitter account.
It's been amazing.
It's amazing.
Now we know he loves the Olive Garden.
He loves Olive Garden, right?
He loves the Olive Garden. He loves karaoke. he's so down to earth. He's just, and he engages with fans a lot. And I think the best is kind of the banter that, you know, Brandon Crawford and some of the other guys are kind of giving him a hard time because he's just like a kid in a candy store right now. So I think because he's so new with Twitter and he's still relatively, you know, a young player, he's, you know, this is years for season three for him, but I think he's going to be a lot of fun. I think George Contos, though, you know, I don't think fans know him quite well because he's in the bullpen. There's so many big personalities down there, and it was his first year, but he's been really fun to watch. as well. So I think those are the two new guys that I will keep an eye on. Of course, and you know, Hunter Pence, we started to get to know Hunter, obviously, with the speeches and all that, but he's like a social media superstar, just waiting to happen. So, yeah. I mean, he did a video of him doing a backflip. He's got such a great personality. I haven't really had the chance to, you know, talk to him or work with him because the timing was just so fast. So I think, you know, see what happens. So I think we've got some great guys, but you know, that's the cool thing is I could tell you this and someone else might jump up and start doing something fun, but we've got a lot of fun personalities on this team. And it's my job to make sure they kind of blossom and our fans, you know, recognize that. So it's a great time.
Well, you know what? We got to say thank you again, Brian, for joining us. It was really, really fun to talk to you. And I honestly, I could sit here and talk to you for hours and hours because all three of us are constantly on Twitter and always looking at what the newest Giants thing is, what the newest meme is as far as the team goes, what the community is saying. So it's really, really a treat for us to get to talk to you. And we just want to say thank you very much for taking the time out for us.
You know, thank you guys for first of all, for letting me do this. This is great. Cause I totally appreciate, you know, our fans, and I appreciate, you know, all the different channels that they're using. And again, hey, some of those ideas you threw at me, I definitely am going to pass them along.
And I think
the cool thing is that we do listen, and if anyone wants to, pass any ideas my way or the Giants way, you guys know the Twitter handles, and we're always looking to improve our Twitter, especially the Twitter, but just, I guess, the social media presence. So if anyone has ideas on how we can do it, I usually don't have to say that because they tell me in not so nice ways, but definitely, I mean, we don't think we have all the answers. And I think that's the one thing is that we're always kind of learning and trying to get better every day. So I appreciate the time.
So people can follow you at Srabe, right? Srabe.
That's right. I'm at Srabe.
And then so do you have the only set of keys to the SF Giants Twitter handle, or are there several wizards behind there? Like when you're sleeping, someone else actually operates the account.
No, there are other people who have the keys. I mentioned Matt Chisholm and a few of our PR team, and they basically they tweet all the important stuff, you know, the transactions and anything that's breaking news type of stuff, so they don't have to funnel it through me. I'll kind of keep an eye on, you know, all the fun stuff, the Rally Zito and the answering fan questions and just kind of day-to-day stuff. So I've been busy lately, but yeah, as we get into spring training, it's definitely a team effort, and a lot of people are behind the scenes helping the Giants at social media. So I often get credit, but there's so many other people that are behind it. So it's a great team effort.
Very cool, man. Well, thank you again for joining us, and everybody out there, follow him on Twitter. And again, Brian Srabian right here on TorchCast. Really, really cool to talk to you, man.
Thanks, guys.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.